AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. I'm not sure what to make of this start to the four-day trading week. Sharp losses in beans, modest losses in corn, mixed trade in wheat. It's almost like wheat was trying to talk corn and soybeans into doing something they didn't want to do. Next up, how do beans respond after leading a two-day downside correction?
Live from Mundo's Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Arlen Suderman from StoneX. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. Glad that you could join us today. Yes?
Yeah. You know, if you change just one letter in Suderman,
yeah,
you get Superman.
I know.
That just occurred to me. Have we ever asked it? You probably can't talk about it, can he?
Yeah, have you noticed the glasses and mild manner that he wears around the office?
He's very mild. Yes, come to think of it.
That's outstanding. I mean, what, really, is there that much difference between a reporter and an economist?
No, I wouldn't say so. Not at all. No.
Oh,
in fact, the Economist is probably the modern equivalent, you know?
You think? Wow.
I think so. Yeah.
Wow. Wow, wow. Hey, I wanted to remind everybody, that's such a good one, Davis. Good one.
Okay. It just occurred to me.
Yeah, I wanted to remind everyone that yesterday morning's AgriTalk featured Machine Repeat. We had a conversation with millennial farmer Zach Johnson. We also had AgriTalk's first conversation with David Scott, Congressman David Scott out of Georgia, who is the new chairman of the House Ag Committee. You should listen to that conversation, okay? Because we laid out some of the priorities that he sees for his committee for the year ahead. And I think it's important for everyone to be in tune with what Congressman Scott has for his priorities. I mean, we talked Farm Bill. We talked CFAP 3. There were several issues that we covered in the conversation that people should be aware of as we get to know a new chairman of the House Ag Committee.
Is it fair to say we've opened a dialogue?
Yes.
We've laid the groundwork for a foundation of communication.
That's
is
right.
What we've done, I feel like.
Right. Okay. Oh, and Big Apple Joe Stackler just let me know that there is an unedited version of the conversation with David Scott because we had to cut things a little bit short
for the air version.
But the unedited version is available on the podcast as well. Okay, man, we got ground to cover. Let's get to it.
Let's get
in the news.
Well, Chip, wheat futures tried to deflect spillover pressure from lower corn and soybean futures, but prices slipped back to settle close to Friday's final prices. Support for wheat in the overnight session was taken from more confirmation that Russia will place export duties on wheat in the weeks ahead, and that will essentially work as a ban on exports. Technically, March SRW wheat saw a volatile session, but in reality, it was an inside day with a high range open and a low range close on the daily chart. Technicians say that points to more price consolidation. Wheat export inspections in the weekend of January 14 totaled just under 278,000 metric tons, in line with trade expectations. Didn't do much to help support prices. March hard red wheat a penny higher, 644. March soft red off 3 1/4, 672 and a quarter. March spring wheat 3.5 cents higher, 646 and 3/4, Chip.
How much of this do we need to ration? How much demand for wheat do we need to ration? That's one of the questions we're going to get into with Arlen today.
Corn export inspections in the weekend of January 14 fell short of trade expectations and totaled just under 877,000 metric tons. USDA this morning also announced the sale of 128,000 metric tons of U.S. corn for delivery to Japan in the current marketing year, and the sale of 100,000 tons of corn for delivery to Israel this marketing year. Traders continue to talk about the need for the market to slow demand for U.S. corn, but These sales indicate some end users are more committed to extending their coverage of needs. Pressure on corn was triggered by beneficial rains in Argentina. Chart watchers now looking for a test of support at 519 in March corn futures. Yeah. March corn futures 5.5 cents lower, 526. May corn off 6.5, 528 and one quarter. July closed at 525, down 7 on the day.
Yeah, if the market's trying to slow down demand, somebody forgot to tell Japan and Israel and other countries, because it feels like there is some demand slipping back into this market right now.
Downside momentum built throughout the session in the bean market stabilized. Growing conditions in South America generated some of the selling interest. That led to a bit of a technical breakdown on the daily chart. The close in March beans below the January 11 high at 1388 and three quarters points to a test of support at the January 7 low at 1342 in the near term. Export inspections of beans in the week ended January 14 of 2.06 million metric tons easily topped trade expectations, and USDA this morning announced the sale of 132,000 metric tons of beans to China for delivery in the 2021-22 marketing year. I think that's the first time I've said that. But the demand news failed to provide much support for bean prices.
Right.
March bean futures 31 cents lower, 1385 and three quarters. May beans dropped 31 and a half, 1383 and a quarter. July bean futures closed at 1369 and a quarter, down 31 and three quarter cents, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a tough morning or tough day in that bean trade. There's no question about it. Hey, let's get to the remaining news in the at the start of the next segment, because I want to get Joe Vaklavic in here, Standard Grain. How you doing, Joe?
Good. What's up, Chip?
Well, let's focus on soybeans here for just a little bit, if we could, Joe. How much down 2 days or two sessions in a row now, have we done significant technical damage in here, or is it just kind of a ordinary setback?
No, I don't think we've done any damage whatsoever. As a matter of fact, it's really surprising to me that we haven't seen more corrections like this. I mean, on a continuation chart, we essentially rallied the bean market, what, like $6 a bushel? And these corrections like this have been really few and far between. I mean, the days where you'll see a 20 or 30 cent down day, there haven't been that many of them. So what's shocking to me is not that we were down 30 today. It's that we haven't seen this several times before throughout the course of this rally.
Okay. So what do you tell your clients when they call you up on a day like today and say, geez, Joe, is that it? What is it over? What do we do now?
It could be over. They don't ring a bell when the top is in. Something I learned a long time ago. So it could be over, or this could just be a run-of-the-mill correction where, you know, after a $5 or $6 rally, we correct $1.50 or $2 before we're off to the races again. It's tough to tell. One thing that should be noted, you know, over the last couple of weeks, the one thing that I've seen that's changed is that crush margins, forward crush margins, have really deteriorated, you know, especially for like into the second quarter and beyond. That's the one maybe fundamental factor that I've seen shift a little bit.
Okay. All right. Very good. So we're watching crush margins this week. What else are you paying real close attention to?
I suppose as Brazil begins soybean harvest, you know, they're really just getting started with the early stuff. But you're going to keep an eye out for yield reports. And the other thing we've got to start talking about, and people will start discussing, is the acreage situation in the U.S. You know, we had 10 million acres of prevent plant this year, last year. If we don't have that this year, we're going to have a lot more acres to go around.
Yeah. Yeah, no question. All right, Joe. Great stuff. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
Yeah, see you, Chip. Bye.
You bet. Joe Vaklavic, Standard Grain. Okay. When we come back, we've got a lot of ground that I want to cover with Arlen Suderman. First up, did the January 12 USDA reports really change the game going forward? That's next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Somebody get a phone booth.
We got him. I don't know how we got him.
In this edition of Exposed, Arlen Suderman or Superman? That is the question. Oh, let's bring him in. Arlen, how you doing, man?
I'm just hoping I'm on the president's pardon list for the mistakes I made over the last year. That's what I'm focused on.
I love that. I love that. Man, welcome back to the show. Everything good?
It's good. It's good. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, as they say.
That's right. That's right. Hey, Arlen, before we get into the meat of the conversation here, we need to get those livestock closes and some cotton quotes, too. Davis, could you do that for us, please?
Sure thing. Let me just hit the closes quick. March cotton, 45 points higher, 81.15. July, up 47 points to close at 82.84. Looks like lower corn prices might have supported the cattle complex early in the session. Feb live cattle, 55 cents higher, 113.32 and a half. April cattle up 115 to 119.35. And March feeder cattle well off session highs, still 97 and one half cents higher on the day at 136.80. Hog market still feels like it's battling hefty supplies, at least for now. February lean hogs, $1.45 lower, 66.47 and a half. April hogs down 122 and one half, 71.42 and a half today, Chip.
Yeah, Arlen, wouldn't it be the speculation is now that there's going to be a list of 100 pardons or something like that. Can you imagine seeing your name on that list and then kind of going, I wonder what I did?
Absolutely.
Oh,
or others
man.
Would say, I hope it covers everything I did.
That's right. That's right. Okay. So, Arlen, let's get into it here. A week ago today, we got the January 12 round of reports, a quarterly grain stocks report, annual production summary, winter wheat seedings, and supply and demand report. Two of those reports. And I'll start with the report that I started with Lance Hoenig with this morning on the show, and that was the quarterly grain stocks report and the revisions to the September 1 corn stocks number, June 1 stocks number. He basically said, listen, we got new data from commercial sources, and when we got the new information, we had to put it out there and put some revised numbers out. Is that a satisfactory answer, or are we still looking for a, hey, how did this happen?
Well, as you know, I was on U.S. Farm Report with Tyne over the weekend, and off the air, I said to Seth, you got to change how you communicate, because he was saying, well, we had, you know, new information come in from commercials, and I said, you got to come up with better answers than that, because there are ways of saying it, but you got to build trust. It may be that everything is totally innocent, but you got to build trust that it was justifiable and you're just not coming up with an excuse. And so far, Lance isn't doing that. Right. And, it's very possible it's accurate. So did a commercial or commercial say, oh, we're sorry, we thought those bins were full, they're empty.
Right.
You know, it'd be one thing if it was an increase. You know, we added it up again. We had more than we thought. But, you know, that's quite an adjustment when you had a series of
sure
two, 3 years where it's reduction after reduction after reduction long after the fact. And, you know, it's a tough job, but you gotta have the trust of the people. The USDA's got the best system in the world, but they're losing trust because of how they communicate.
Right. Right. And Arlen, those downside adjustments to the stocks give the impression that they overestimated the previous year's crop. So it's distrust building on distrust.
Yeah. And one of the things is that when farmers fill out their surveys, I'm probably giving away secrets I shouldn't hear, but it's what they have told me that they do. They assume, based on their years of data, that the farmers are understating yields, so they adjust those yields up there. Do we know that that is continuing to be the case? Certainly last year you could make an argument maybe that wasn't the case, and I think you could probably make that argument this year as well. Are they making wrong assumptions? They do reevaluate every year those revaluations from everything that they tell me seem to be internal. I'm not sure they're truly listening. At least I don't get that impression that they're truly listening to outside with the desire to learn.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's frustrating to say the least for many producers out there that are dealing with this after coming up with a marketing plan, initiating that marketing plan, implementing, and in many cases, finalizing a marketing plan before the rally has matured. What do you say to them?
Yeah, and this may be the right place to say it. I want to be clear that I don't see any evidence or any indication of a conspiracy or desire to defraud or desire to mislead or anything like that.
Right.
I don't see it as that at all. But the producer has to make decisions based on the information that he or she has. And we trust the USDA to give us the best information that they have. It is a difficult job, and being off 1% has big implications for the markets a lot of times, which means that when that does happen, you just have to do all you can to communicate. But the farmer's still in a situation of running a business where he or she still has to make the decisions based on the best information available and have the proper risk risk insurance, whatever that may be, to
balance, limit
their exposure to risk. Yeah,
yep.
Manage their risk exposure for the possible unexpected or black swans that may happen out there, and move forward and not look back.
Yep, man. I've been talking about flexibility in your marketing plan for quite a while on the show, and this year that flexibility was needed. There are many years when the flexibility just costs you some money and a call option. But boy, when this year, it obviously would have helped out in that marketing plan. So all of the supply side issues that we just talked about, Arlen, wouldn't really matter if there wasn't a bunch of demand around for corn and soybeans, right?
Absolutely. This is a demand driven rally,
yep,
similar to what we had back in 2006, 7, 8, into 9, rising demand and production trying to keep up with it. And those are the fun rallies. Now, it's being, you know, as you hinted at, weather is contributing to it, and weather threats come and go. But underneath of it, we have solid demand, much of which is based in China. But there's other factors in play outside of China as well.
Right. But boy, that China factor, my goodness, we most expected that there would be an increase in demand from China for the current marketing year, the 2020-21 marketing year. I don't know if everybody thought that it would be as robust as it is, but here we are. Is it real? Does it stick around? How much longer does it last?
Well, based on our conversations with our team on the ground in China, we believe that USDA is being conservative in its soybean demand estimates, which means there's more upside risk to the demand for soybeans over the coming rest of the marketing year, frankly. And on corn, we believe that the demand is there, but the Chinese Communist Party is going to keep a lid on imports for various reasons, and that while it's higher than it's been, and it's at good levels, it's probably not as high as the market is anticipating. We think Chinese government will eventually fail in its efforts to be self-sustainable in corn, but there are ways that it can keep the lid on corn imports at around 12 million metric tons for the next year or two.
Okay, are you talking calendar year or marketing year?
Marketing year.
Okay. That's one of the lowest numbers I've heard on corn imports for the 2021-22 marketing years.
Yeah. Now, China keeps their TRQs are on calendar years. They did 11.3 in 2020. we're looking for something similar around 12 million metric tons in 21. It depends on when shipments are as far as what any particular marketing year might end up being.
Okay. We'll talk about that a little bit more. As you can hear, I'm surprised by the music, but we're coming up against a hard break. We're talking with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist for StoneX. We'll be back with more and Arlen here in just a moment. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Cordonier maintains his Brazilian crop estimate. His bias is neutral to slightly lower going forward. No change to Cordonier's Argentine crop projections either. Again, his bias is neutral to lower. Chinese grain imports notch records. China again sold nearly all of the wheat available at its latest weekly auction. China sold 99.7% of the total offered. Ukraine to decide whether to cap corn exports next week. ICAR has lowered the Russian wheat export forecast. China's GDP rose 2.3% last year. It's the only major economy to record gains in 2020. Yellen urges more aid to avoid longer, more painful U.S. recession reflected in equities today. Give Pro Farmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Jim Flory. Got Arlen Suderman is our guest today from students from StoneX. Davis, if you would, please, before we get back to Arlen, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Well, let's do March. Hard red winter wheat, 1 penny higher today, 644. March soft red down 3 1/4 to 672 1/4. March corn futures, 5.5 cents lower, 526. May corn slipped 6 1/2 cents, 528 1/4. May bean futures, 31 cents lower, 1385 3/4. May beans dropped, that was March. May beans dropped 31.5. 1383 1/4. March cotton 45 points higher, 81.15. February live cattle 55 cents higher, 113.32 1/2. March feeders well off session highs, 97 1/2 cents higher still, 136.80. And February lean hogs $1.45 lower, 66.47 1/2. Chip, that's your market recap. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Arlen Suderman is the chief commodities economist for StoneX. He's our guest today. So, Arlen, if we see 2021-22 corn exports from the U.S. into China, I'm not going to pin you down to a number, but let's say in that 10 to 15 million metric ton range, is there much of a need right now to ration overall demand for corn?
Yeah, that's the key question, and I would say no. Now, what the crop report did last week and how it was a game changer was by lowering the yield and backward adjusting the stocks to essentially bring us down to that 1.55 billion bushel stocks carryover. That's getting down to pipeline supplies. That's not a reason to ration. What that says is we got to build risk premium in case we have a short crop in South America, in case China buys more than we need or that we currently believe or whatever. But right now, we don't have any proof or any evidence that we need to ration demand. It's going to be 2 or 3 months before we know if we have a short crop out of South America overall. Okay. It's going to be, we believe, a while before we know if China is going to buy the significant quantities that are currently believed. Let's put it this way. If COFCO has 6 million metric tons on the books right now, it is highly profitable with local domestic prices, $2.5 above what they can ship it into Chinese ports. They could make a lot of money. Why aren't they shipping all 6 million tons to China today if they believe that import licenses aren't going to be a problem?
Okay. Yeah. Boy, that's a good point right there, Arlen. But
there are two grain companies that are primarily pushing this narrative that China's really going to increase its import. Costco is one of them. Yeah, they're state-run, and I won't name the other private company that's doing it. They have a lot to gain as well. Just because Costco's doing it doesn't mean it will happen. We can look at other examples when the Chinese Communist Party said, uh-uh, isn't going to happen no matter what you say. And we believe it goes against the major objectives that the Chinese Communist Party has for China right now. And they have been making a point in their communist-controlled press, their state-run press, to have story after story in recent weeks emphasizing that very point, which is why we believe that they plan on holding the lid. As I said, I think they're eventually going to fail, but they can go a year or two, fill in the gap with imports of, well, first of all, feeding wheat. I mean, since the 1st of October, they have dumped, what, 20 million metric tons of wheat on the market out of their reserves. They have imported a lot more. They've increased barley imports. They've dramatically increased grain sorghum imports. I think it's very positive for the grain sorghum farmers in the plains going forward, as long as the government doesn't intervene on grain sorghum imports. That's always an unknown. Very positive for them. And corn imports will be good relative to the history, just not as good as the market is currently factored in and as USDA is predicting.
Okay. Couple of tangent thoughts on this. What does Australia's tensions with China, what does that do to potential Chinese imports of U.S. feed grains?
Well, Australia doesn't export a lot of corn to China, so it would be in the area of grain sorghum and barley.
Right.
So if you eliminate that as an option, that has been benefiting U.S. grain sorghum in particular exports to China dramatically. And it's the barley exports or imports, it has shifted to some other countries, Canada and Europe, for example.
Okay. Where do we stand in China's efforts to rebuild its hog herd?
Excellent point. China just released data over the weekend that says they're like 3.3% below pre-ASF levels. Really?
Okay.
If that's the case, then why are domestic prices closer to last year's record highs than they are to pre-ASF levels at a time when they're setting records on imports? That doesn't make sense. Our people on the ground and the numbers we've been able to compile, we believe they're close to 18 or 20% below pre-ASF levels.
Ooh.
That's pretty impressive in and of itself.
Because
sure it is. We have these soy meal demand numbers when we got another 20% of the hog herd to rebuild.
I'm sorry, Arlen. I thought you were going to follow up something with something
okay.
there. Yeah.
Well, that just means that we've got a lot more soy meal demand coming.
Right.
Soybean
right.
demand. Yeah.
I'm following you now with an additional 20% of that hog herd to rebuild. I got you.
Yeah.
To me, with where, okay, I'm not going to just look at China anymore. I want to look at all of Southeast Asia. And where we stand with that hog herd there and the rebuilding, it still seems like there's opportunity for, A, some better pork exports than what the market is anticipating right now. Everybody seems to be so focused on China and kind of forgetting about, you know, pork exports into Vietnam and the Philippines and Malaysia, that there's so much opportunity there. And with the hog herds being rebuilt, there's still some opportunity on feed grains too. I think I'm trying to eat my cake and have it too.
Well, to a great extent, you're making a good point, because as exports have started to slow into China, we have seen stronger than expected exports into other Southeast Asian countries.
Right.
Where they're still not recovered from ASF. In China, they've been able to build these high-rise, intense, commercialized hog facilities. And they've eliminated food waste as a major ration component. It's very hard for us to comprehend how big of a factor that food waste was. So if you look back at 2020, when they were in the process of that rebuilding, they exceeded crushing 2 million metric tons of soybeans in 1 week. They did that 23 times, almost half of the year, exceeded 2 million metric tons. They didn't do that at all in 2019. They did it once in 2018 and only four times in 2017. So eliminating food waste in these commercialized farms where they have reason to put as much soy meal in there as feasible to get these hogs to gain as quickly as possible to get these big returns of $300 to $350 a hog on a feeding margin. That's why we're seeing this demand rise so fast and why we continue to see that strength. And pork demand, yes, is still strong into other Southeast Asian countries.
Okay. All right. We're running short on time here, Arlen, but I got a couple of more spots that I want to get to. So give me 30 seconds and answer this question. Is the ethanol market here as touch and go as it looks like it is?
It's not good. But ethanol producers, many of them are saying, we're going to keep going, we're going to weather the storm, we're going to go. We're still at risk if the economy shuts down, but that's looking a little less likely now as we hear Governor Cuomo and some other governors saying we need to open up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Price projections. Is there still upside lift in corn and soybeans and wheat?
I can build bullish cases for both corn and soybeans and wheat yet. It still just matters that we don't know yet, particularly for corn and wheat. For soybeans, I think we still got some rationing to do. A lot of it hinges on what happens with how long China has to buy from us until it can get a full steam of ships flowing from Brazilian ports. But we could still see a lot of volatility in soybeans for the next year, year and a half. Corn and wheat, it's a different story. We've got to have help from the weather. That we won't know that for some time yet. We're not running out of either one. We are potentially running out depending on how things play out. So with wheat, okay. Black Sea is setting the pace. With corn, it's South American production.
Corn and soybeans combined, how many more acres do we need in 2021?
We need to take soybeans up to 90 million plus. Corn needs to hang on to 90 million. That gives you a little bit of play with the prevent plant acres that Joe talked about earlier.
Yep.
That means soybeans have to maintain their ratio.
Man, it is always fun to talk to you, my friend. Thank you so much. It's always rapid fire and clear thoughts. Dude, you awesome job. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. That is Arlen Suderman. He is the chief commodities economist there at Stone X. Wow, Davis, page full of notes. And what that means is there's a couple of highlights that I want to go back, pull those out, offer up a couple of additional thoughts on it. But one of the things that I caught myself doing, I heard mm-hmm. Arlen doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of what we are upset with Lance Honig at NASS about. You know, we just need more information. We need to get better information. We need to know more before we can make those decisions. Interesting.
We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back. What?
Just like you've done before, and you wrap my heart around your
Dolly, there's a little Dolly. Happy birthday, Dolly Parton.
Happy birthday.
Just when I'm about to make you
a very, very youthful 75 years young.
75 today.
75 yep. today. Unbelievable. One of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sorry. It's kind of hard not to tap a toe along to that.
Well, sure.
You know, and she's only got about a million of them like that.
A million.
A million.
That's the rough figure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. All right. So the conversation with Arlen, he's tireless for one thing in his efforts to collect information. And when he talks about his his people on the ground in China. They've had the company that he is with, StoneX, which was FC Stone, which was INTL FC Stone, which, you know, has gone through a few renditions here, has always had a presence in China. So it's an established, it's a documented. And therefore, when I hear a number like 12 million metric tons for the 2021-22 marketing year in Chinese corn imports from the U.S., and how that relates to some of the other estimates that we have heard, some hefty estimates, that is a little troubling. It really is. I mean, he mentioned the demand-driven markets that we experienced in 06, 07, into 08. Now, 09 was a disaster because we had a terrible corn crop. I shouldn't say we had a terrible corn crop. We had a grossly overestimated corn crop, in my opinion, because of the condition of that crop, that ultimately led to some unbelievable pricing opportunities for importers around the world. And we saw a solid export campaign in that 2009-10 marketing year. You come to the 2010 crop, and that was a crop that faded into the end of the season. Huh. I wonder if we're starting to be able to connect some dots.
Sounds familiar.
On similarities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So 2019 crop. Was it as big as what USDA said it was, or did some quality issues kind of chip away at that 2019 crop that ultimately led to not just a downside revision in the stocks data, but a series of downside revisions to the stocks data? Then we get to this 2020 crop that just kind of faded into the end of the year. And I was kind of, you know, half joking about it. You know, guys like Arlen and myself and other analysts are absolutely, positively, 100% correct in saying, you know what? Boy, the supply side story is still being written for this corn market, because we've got a lot of corn that still needs to the seed needs to be delivered to the farm in Brazil before they can harvest a bean crop and follow up the combine with a corn planter and plant that second corn crop that accounts for somewhere between 70 and 75% of their annual corn production before we can figure out what exactly the supply side scenario is going into the 2021-22 marketing year. So, you know, I'm asking for more time to figure it out. Arlen's asking for more time to figure it out. But as we talk about the growing season that we have just wrapped up, I've shown some frustration with it. I don't like the way that the cotton crop estimate was handled. That's the one that has really got me kind of scratching my head and trying to figure out exactly where things went wrong with NASS and their 2020 crop estimates. The corn crop estimate, it's like I said this morning, Davis, you could see that NASS was chasing it down. And they kind of led the way to the downside on that crop estimate in a lot of ways, because it was the USDA estimate was coming in below the average pre-report trade guesses. So we were getting these bullish reports. It's just that when you get a record, a 3.8 bushel drop from November to January on that corn yield estimate, yeah, it's going to catch your attention, especially when it goes along with a much smaller December 1 stocks estimate than what we thought we were going to see, because it implied huge feed and residual use in the first quarter of the marketing year. There's just a lot of uncertainty that's out there right now that we're still trying to figure out, Davis.
It really is. Yeah, and one of the things that he said very early on in the conversation was losing trust. Just talking about losing trust.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a dangerous thing, you know? There's an awful lot of that going on right now in our country on a lot of different fronts. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is. We've been talking about it all day.
Yeah, you know, I think part of the answer there is understanding the process. But, you know, Arlen made a good point when he said on the stocks data in particular that, hey, you know what? They got updated information from the survey, from the commercial side of the thing, filling out the data. You know what? Right. That answer, while it might be and probably is 100% true, I'm not sure if those that are using the information are willing to say that that's a good enough answer any longer. They want more. Like, why was it late? Who was it late from? That's the kind of information that they're looking for. Transparency will help build that trust going forward. Inauguration day tomorrow. And we're going to take a different kind of a swing at Inauguration Day for us. We've got former USDA Secretaries Mike Johanns and Dan Glickman joining us.